There's a movement happening. Some call it Reformation. Others call it Holy Discontent. We call it the Resistance. Traditions and harmful teachings have kept the bride captive for centuries. We will explore these systems and contrast them with God's design. Join us as we discuss God's patterns for life, ministry, and most importantly, His church. We will do this with scripture, testimony, music, and satire. We are resisting the system and embracing the design. We are the Resistance.
Welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network.
It's going to be a long week.
I'm the only straight-faced person in the studio right now, just so you guys know.
Yeah, right.
It's because you just told everybody.
You had candy,
candy in my mouth.
All five of our listeners.
No, I was just like that wrestling match you just had with the extra set of headphones.
I won.
Yeah, right.
All right. So, that is a tag team effort.
We can give you guys all the cool information before we get started today. You guys find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven.
They
you
fight us?
Fight us on Twitter.
No, don't do that.
Fight us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church.
I'm Terry.
I'm Mark.
I'm Jason.
I'm hungry.
You can't be hungry.
I know. I just had a giant pork steak and some pancakes.
In the studio.
I finished it before we started. I'm also Mark. I'm not actually hungry. I lied. I apologize.
Forgive me, Jesus. That Mark and I are both wound up because we missed last week. Yep. You guys did a good job, by the way.
You're wound and pound bound.
Yeah, that could happen.
We were kind of like brothers on whatever last week.
I don't think so, man.
Just a little bit.
I've met them. You guys are not like them.
They're on the other station right now.
Right.
They're different. So what's everybody do? What did you guys do while we were gone to Chicago?
What did we do?
Yeah, I mean, we were gone for days, right?
Three.
We were.
Four.
Oh, I did a lot of yard work.
Did you really?
I did. Preparing for my son's first birthday.
Oh, you did that at my house too, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was pretty nice. Come home. I can't wait for Evan's birthday. First birthday with Tonka toys and stuff in the dirt. It's going to be good. I have too many princess birthdays, you know?
Right.
With the grandkids, so it's good.
We need
good
a monster
time.
Truck birthday.
Yeah. I think that's what we're having, aren't we?
Yes,
something like that.
I hope we have a monster truck commercial in this week. I don't remember if we do.
Oh, wow.
It'll be good.
I don't either.
A little different.
We should actually take him out and put him in the big pickup truck and, like, just
turn. It's time for him to learn.
We totally
hey,
should.
He's one. It's time for him to learn to drive, man. Nothing like an F-350 dually to set him upright. Right?
Right.
I would let him turn the key just so you hear the thing rumble and start.
Now that it has a proper starter solenoid.
Yeah, now that it can start with a key.
Screwdriver works just fine.
That's how I started my day. 100 and some degrees outside, putting a solenoid on an old truck.
Hey, we fixed two trucks today.
Two trucks before 9
Can you
o'clock.
Guys put one of those on my planer?
No, you're on your own on that one. You guys shouldn't break your planer. I don't know what to tell you. You break your wood shop equipment, you're just done. That's all there is to it. That's it, really?
Yeah.
He does one stupid thing, and you guys are off the
I'm
air.
Sorry.
You guys can't even.
I have that effect.
Mark,
on
you're going to have to settle down, all right? Because right. I'm not the only one that's going to talk while you guys sit here and
right.
laugh.
Well, no, you got that whole monologue you're going to do. So
oh,
I
that's
just,
right.
You I guys, just make them crack up for the next 20 minutes.
I do have a monologue I'm going to do,
right.
And I'm going to rant.
But if I start pouring lighter fluid on stuff, just kick me out of the studio.
I'm leaving. I'm out.
Jay Leno style.
So, we went to Coffee Fest in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. That's what you guys did.
Navy Pier. Good show. Brought some jobs back, I think, for the neighborhood because we sold some stuff, you know, and that's really good because we go there and then people like what we do and they, you know, want to support us and they buy things and they sell stuff for us and all that money comes back into Hyde Park and we create jobs with it. It's really good. And it was a good show.
Mm-hmm.
The wood shop, of course, got the majority of the business and then their planer broke. So we might get a little trouble trying to get caught up on that, but we'll make it somehow.
Figure that.
Sure we will.
I had to scrape the wood bare with piece of glass.
Yeah, it was really cool. The first night they have an opening night reception, which is for the vendors because you spend a bunch of money for a booth, so they feed you the first night. And they did it at this on Navy Pier. There's this place called the Land Shark, and it's a outdoor little seating area that has a little shack next to it, and they can put buffet lines out there. And I would say that the wind was blowing a steady, 30-35 miles an hour. It was overcast and about 50 degrees. And it was one of the shortest parties that we attended. It was like we could barely sit down long enough to get our food down because we were like flocking seagulls all around us begging for food and screeching and screaming. Mark got so tired of them that he had this hot poblano sauce that he was using on his salsa in his chips, and he decided to dip a chip and throw it to one of the birds. And I think these birds live on that stuff because each just gobbled it down and didn't even have an effect. I guess they
birds can't actually taste spicy stuff.
See, that's what I figured. So he thought he was getting the bird back, but he didn't.
Man,
that's a good.
Why don't you tell me these things before I try and do stuff like that?
It's good because he didn't need
them like explode.
There was no reason for him to be hurting the animals. Yes, were they annoying, but they've been trained by humans to be annoying.
I wasn't hurting them. I was retraining them.
Well, apparently they love poblano sauce.
Apparently.
Because he woofed it down and we're begging for more. So that was our opening night. That was exciting.
All right, you guys, I'm looking at your Coke cans here. And you should really switch because the whole message is share a can with. And so Mark got the share a can with an adventurer, which he thought was suiting.
And I got Dad.
And then Terry got sharing Coke with Dad.
No, that's what we did, though. Like, I gave him that. He gave me this.
Oh, okay.
He's lying. That ain't what happened.
Shh. They don't know that.
So we had this – we ended up – usually we don't, like, spend a lot of money on hotels because we really are cheap. But because of
– just to let you guys know that.
Well, just because of restrictions, though, of our travel restrictions and everything and the timing of trying to get up there, we ended up getting a hotel downtown. And it's expensive to get a hotel in downtown Chicago. It's like $200 a night. And we stayed at the Hilton Garden, and it was really disappointing because we got there, and we were like, we had to pay to park, and the only way to get cheap parking is you park the car, and you don't get it out until you're ready to leave. You don't get in and out privilege. So we're a mile and a quarter from Navy Pier, and we're like, okay, well, we'll walk. If we have to, that's what we'll do. We'll walk. And but we went to the hotel and said, hey, do you guys have a shuttle? Is there a shuttle to Navy Pier? And the ladies were rude, and they're like, no, there's no shuttle. Why don't you just walk? It's only a mile and a half and the weather's nice. I said, what about tomorrow when it's supposed to rain? And they just stared at me. So we walk outside. No, I'm serious. We walk outside of the lobby of the hotel and there's a sign by the bus stop that says free Navy Pier shuttle route. And we look and this shuttle comes past and it stops across the street, across the corner from where we're staying. And we go over there. It's like, it's a free shuttle to Navy Pier, like picks up right in front of the hotel. And nobody inside the hotel knew that.
You can't do much about that.
No, you can't. So if you go to Chicago and you want to go to Navy Pier and you stay downtown, don't ask anybody whether there's a shuttle. Just go outside and look at a sign.
Right.
It's the only way to go.
Right.
So
most likely there is a free shuttle somewhere.
There is, and it was, and the shuttle driver was the best part of the whole trip.
Hilarious.
He was one of the most enjoyable people. You talk about somebody that loves his job. He was clowning with everybody that got on that thing and making jokes and singing, and we got him 2 days in a row. And he remembered us from the day before. It was just delightful to ride with him. It was like, oh, I hope we get him on the way home, you know. I like it when people love their jobs. Yep. I really do. No matter what it is.
It's huge difference.
You know, I mean, this is a pretty menial job. Guy rides a shuttle around the same route, you know, 2.5 mile route in Chicago every day, and he just really, really enjoyed it. So, anything else before we get into the deep discussion topic of the day?
Nope.
That's it?
Let's just get into it.
We just hired new people this week. We had like 5 new employees.
I know. We're really getting some employees now, aren't we? We've got a lot of business going on.
I was going to say. I think now we can start chipping away at what we have on our plate.
You think? We got some work.
Oh, we're about to make our plate bigger, just by the way.
Not as big as your plate.
Yeah. You know, the best part, too, is that some of these people that we're hiring...
I don't get it.
...are really ready to be helped. You know what I mean? Yeah. They are like, needing a break and ready to take advantage of it, and that's really awesome. I love when that happens because you can...
Yeah, it's a learning thing for me, too, because I'm not going to go into specifics of identity, but helping some guy out who's currently in a halfway house. And
yeah.
Just this...
Trying to get him out of that trap. Oh, my goodness.
Well, and trying to get him actually employed is like pulling teeth. You got to talk to 50 million people, and it takes 5 days, and the guy just needs a job.
Right. Which he needs a job because otherwise he'll end up back in jail by the time they let him out. That's really ridiculous.
And you would think that these people who that's their entire job is to make sure that this guy succeeds, like, would just be a little more helpful.
Apparently it's not their job. Their job is to make sure he doesn't get offered a job anywhere that doesn't have a landline. And it's like, we graduated. Our phones no longer are connected to the wall with a wire, and now we're being punished.
That's pretty much what it is.
Well, the next step is not only do you have to have a landline, but you have to have a rotary phone.
Maybe a fax machine. That'll be one. We've had that before. So the other side of, you know, what we do is, you know, one of our employees' brother got shot tonight or this afternoon multiple times. And always sad whenever stuff like that happens because it, you know, in the life I grew up in, that wasn't anything that I was close to. And it seems like I'm close to it a lot now.
Yep.
And it's a really sad deal. And there's really, you realize how helpless you are to do anything in those situations. Like whatever we could do to help would be minuscule compared to the crisis that that brings. So our prayers are with him. And I'm hoping that, you know, he pulls through and he's fine. We don't know. We don't know what his condition is. It was multiple times being shot. And we'll have to try and find out tomorrow. So we understand that there's tonight we're going to talk about spiritual warfare. And there's physical manifestations to spiritual warfare. And this person just recently came back to our program. And within a few days, when he came the first time, within a few days, he had crisis come all over him.
Yep.
And then we got him employed somewhere else for a while. Now he's back. And within a few days, crisis all over him. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I know there's a, that's a spiritual thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Well, and but it manifests physically.
When he came to me today to tell me what was going on, he's like, I just don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose my job. I'm just afraid that you guys aren't going to let me come back here because I have to go take time off to deal with this. And I was like, dude, we don't just – I told him, I was like, we don't just hire people. We bring people into our family. It's like we're going to do whatever we have to take care of you because I realize that it's more than just a job.
Right.
And I told him that we're here to do anything he needs us to do as long as we can help. Like I realize that this is – a chance for us to minister to him and be able to help him through a really tough time.
Yeah, and it will be. So let's do our first song before we start into this monologue,
because
it's kind of lengthy, and I think it'd be a good thing to do. So why don't you introduce that, and let's do that.
The song is Nothing But the Blood of Jesus by Jars of Clay with the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Oh, man, I love this version.
So it's great. We're just going to listen to it now. It speaks for itself.
Hey, welcome back. I don't even have my headphones on, and I'm still welcoming everybody back.
That's good. You can do that.
I can only hear out of one side of them anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, so tonight we're talking about spiritual warfare.
Yeah, but before we get to that,
oh, man,
I want to set up some scenarios for you to consider.
Scenario number one.
Scenario.
If I asked you to drive through a neighborhood and assess its spiritual condition, how would you do that? Think about it. Think about the areas you've driven through that you think are spiritually in need and the ones that you drive through that you don't pay attention to that or think that that's an issue. Would you, if you had to do that, would you rely on your discernment spiritually or would you look at the physical indicators around you? Now, you might want to give that holy answer and say, oh, I definitely rely on my discernment. But when I ask people this in person and I get to press them on some questions like a cross-examiner, since I spent all week in jury duty, I can do that now.
You gained that skill.
I did.
You're certified in cross-examination.
That is correct. They always give me answers of physical indications. So does an abundance of pawn shops, payday loan companies, and vacant buildings communicate to you that there's a poor spiritual condition? What if you observed wealth and poverty and fancy cars and big houses? Does that give you a different indication of the spiritual condition? I mean, just be honest and think about it. People come to my neighborhood to, quote, minister because it's poor. There's homeless people there. There's a bunch of broken down buildings. My question is, why would they leave their neighborhood and come all the way to my neighborhood to minister? Is it because they discerned a need for their work, or have they assessed a need based on the physical condition of my area?
Yeah.
Have they looked at it and said, this place needs Jesus?
Well, I'm sure that is what we get. I mean, with Hyde Park having this huge vacancy rate where there's just gaping holes in buildings because nobody's boarding up the windows.
Right. And a huge unemployment number, and there's all kinds of problems there. But my point is that a proper indication of spiritual need?
Right.
Wealth is not an indicator of a lack of spiritual need, and poverty is not an indicator of spiritual need. Jesus was homeless, and he was poor. What I think happens is pride causes people to think that way. So, what I long for is the day that someone says to me, I'm here to help because I see the oppressed in your midst. I see the disinvestment has caused all this damage to the infrastructure. I see the neglect that people don't pay attention to this. Our neighbors that are just miles away, we ignore them and go about our daily business storing up for ourselves, and we don't want to do that anymore. That's what I long to see. I want people to say, I'm here to help repair what's been broken by men and rebuild the lives that have been destroyed by racism. That's what I love to see people say. So my next question is closer to the headlines, right? After things in Ferguson settled down, there were many people, and I mean this happened for a good 2 or 3 months after things started to settle down, probably between that window where the protests were dying down before, you know, Cleveland and Baltimore fired up.
Yeah.
There was a period of time.
Right.
And the people from outside the area kept asking us if we were ministering in that area. It's like all of a sudden everybody was interested in what we weren't doing because they felt like we should be doing it. Like,
right.
Why aren't you in Ferguson? You know, it's right there by you. It's like, well, I got my hands full in Hyde Park, to yeah. tell you the truth. And we were invited to join others in revival plans for the area. So I asked a question, who are you going to minister to in Ferguson? And almost everyone across the board said the same answer. Well, hurting people. The idea expressed was that because of the unrest, they were now aware that there were hurting people in Ferguson. Awesome. That's great. We should become aware before the problem escalates to violence.
Yeah.
But we're not watching. We're not paying attention. We're too consumed with our own life. And then we, by opportunity, we'll go there and we'll do something because now we know that there's an issue.
Well, I think that's a deception that the American dream puts in people, you know? So it's
sure.
basically just closing yourself off to care for others, really. I mean.
Right. So when they saw, and look, this is a, I think somewhat, it's a natural reaction born out of the condition of the American church. It's not a spiritual reaction. You understand the difference of what I'm saying is that I believe this is a somewhat fleshly reaction. This is out of our nature and out of the way we've been conditioned and trained. This is not out of the Holy Spirit that's coming to us and telling us how to react to these situations, because the obvious answer is Jesus. I agree to all of this.
Right.
Jesus is the answer.
Yeah.
The supposed answer was a need to receive the gospel. And I disagree with that, at least in part. And here's why. To me, what's wrong in Ferguson was not a lack of gospel presentation, but it was a lack of gospel application.
Yeah.
Now, there are different kinds of people listening to what we're saying, and where your mind went to when I said that will tell a lot about you. Did your mind go to, that's right, man, those protesters needed to apply the gospel to their lives? Mm-hmm. That says something about you.
Mm-hmm.
Or did your mind go to, those people oppressing those people need to apply the gospel to their lives and set them free?
Right.
That'll say something else about you. Now, in every case I was involved with, centered on preaching to the people, there was an assumption that the need for the gospel was in the hearts of the hurting people. Not one person I talked to expressed a need to proclaim the gospel specifically to the police department, the mayor, or the city council. Now, is this because of a perception that the behavior of the residents was not Christ-like? How about the racist emails that we know were sent by the police and some of the
yeah.
city employees? Were those Christ-like behaviors? So what are you judging, right?
Yeah.
When you look at this situation, how are you responding to this now exposed need for the gospel to be applied in certain areas?
I think part of that, too, and I don't want to get too far off because I know you
have right.
a lot to go over, but like yeah, the idea of – because you
hours.
Talk about people that come into our neighborhood and minister, and even in those situations when people are like, oh, yeah, Ferguson, whatever. And not that there's not a time and place for providing things or whatever, but I think it's such a small view of what ministry would actually mean. Like if your whole self is focused on doing the work of God, then you're going to be obedient to whatever he tells you to do and wherever he tells you to go. But if you already have it in your box that the ministry is putting on a concert in a broken down neighborhood and handing out some food or some shoes or whatever it is, then it's like, well, maybe the ministry that God wants you to do is to proclaim hypocrisy or oppression
right.
or whatever it is, you know?
Well, I think many examples of that in Scripture, and we're going to get into that, though, when we change gears here in just a second, but I want to do our first commercial break before we go any further, because I am going to change thoughts whenever we come back.
All right. I was born into a system constructed for failure. It's a sinking ship being manned by drunken sailors. Escape artists behind the bars of a jailer. An asthmatic attack and they withhold the inhaler. If the shoe doesn't fit, what good is a tailor? In the midst of this crisis, please cancel the gala. Without a symphony, there's no need for...
Hey, welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network.
Just for you listeners out there, you couldn't see it, but in that intro music, everybody but me.
Well,
no,
right.
No. Everybody,
I'm just calling myself.
But me. Okay, so 3/4 of our hosts may or may not have been belly dancing.
I shimmied.
My belly did not move. I don't know what you're talking Same. About.
Precise muscle control.
Are you talking about belly dancing or belly dancing?
Sorry.
And all right, let's change lanes for a minute.
The worship circle did the music.
Let's go.
Change lanes. We just derailed.
Get back on track.
All right.
Let's change lanes.
Too soon?
Here we go. So, fact. Many churches and ministries travel to the inner city to preach and give away things to the homeless and poor residents. Am I right or not?
Right.
Very
because
true.
We live there, yes. And they're in there all the time, aren't they?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Setting up on the street corner and putting up their tent and all these different things. That's what they do. The assumption must be that these people who are poor and live here need Jesus because yes. Look at the area. How can you possibly love God and be stuck in that area? That's the only thing I can assume because I don't need them to come give me stuff and I live there. You guys all live there. You don't need them to come.
You're going
to
make me angry with all this.
It just made me angry when I wrote it this morning. So why would a group of people travel some distance, whatever it is, sometimes 20, 30 miles away to preach and give things away? Why would they do that?
See, the thing that, I mean, the only thing like that bothers me about ministry. That is that, and then leave. Like,
that's it, and then leave.
Because, we all left from 20 plus miles away to come here and do ministry, but we came here to do ministry, and we're still here to do ministry.
So the question is there no one in need where they live? Are all the needs met where they live? Because I've never lived in that place. Yeah. I mean, I've lived in some pretty wealthy neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did pretty well at times in my life, and I there was always need everywhere around me.
Yes,
yep. You just had to look a little bit.
Well,
for
the thing is that there's no kudos for ministering in the suburbs.
You got that right. So, is there no one? Here's the other question: is they come down there as if there's no one already there doing the work of Jesus? Like we will stop and talk to people and say, "Hey, you know what? We're here 24/7." We got a lot of good things going on. Why don't you partner with us and work? And they just don't. For the most part, they don't. The ones that are doing this – now, wait.
Well, it's because it's their outreach, Terry.
That's true. But I'm only talking about the ones that are doing ministry in this way. So don't get me wrong because we have churches that partner with us all the time. The question is there no ministry to support that might actually be better equipped to minister there? Listen to this. In world missions – I'm talking about whenever we send missionaries outside of our country to another country – the missions organization has a goal now, which is pretty much dominant over all missions organizations, and that is to raise up indigenous people and to support them in ministry. Now, they learned this lesson in Central Africa many years ago where coups would overthrow governments, and as a coup overthrew a government, they ran everybody out of the country. So what would happen is missions organizations' work would be shut down in certain areas because of political unrest.
Mm-hmm.
So when they found out they could raise up indigenous leaders, when they left, the work continued. So now that's really the primary focus is to raise up indigenous leaders that can stay there and continue to do the work. But in America, we go hand out and leave, hand out and leave.
Yeah. Another thing along those lines is that – so we had a volunteer group in this week also.
Yeah,
which is really good.
It's one of our great partner cities, one of our great partner ministries that actually understands what I'm talking about here.
Yeah. So we were with them, and it was really hot, and they were doing really heavy stuff. So we took a pretty extended lunch break and talked to them a lot about ministry and whatnot. And one of the girls she's in St. Louis, and she works with City Lights. And she used to be, and I can't remember the name. It's that group that does the tuck pointing with kids.
Harambe.
Yes. She used to work with them.
That's part of New City. The same people.
Yeah. She used to work with them. And so So we're talking, and I was like, so how's your guys' week been? Because they're from Nashville and Florida,
mm-hmm.
and they're a bunch of high school kids and they're leaders. And so they came in for a full week and doing all different stuff. And so they're essentially going from place to place to place every day, and which is usually how these groups function.
Right.
And so not you know the kids didn't really say much, but this girl, I can't remember her name. Anyway.
Olivia.
Yes. Yep. It was Olivia. She's like, well, honestly, I'm having some trouble with it because I used to be with Harambe.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? She's like, I used to be with Harambe, and it was, you know, 7 weeks. It was all the same kids. And, you know, we had a really structured, you know, day and schedule yes. because
it's work.
It's work. And she's like, and that was, you know, that was really good. And this is just everything's crazy, and it's different kids every day.
Control chaos.
And it's really, really hard on me. You know, I'm just having a hard time, you know, dealing with this. And so I brought up that idea of, like, that's usually what happens with these mission trips for kids is that they go to a different place every summer, or sometimes, you know, within 1 week, they're going to 5 or 6 different places. And I was just saying how, you know, it kind of deprives on both on all fronts. It deprives the people on the mission trip of actually investing and seeing
right.
and digging deeply into whatever's going on there.
Right. It creates a superficiality.
Yeah, and it deprives the hosting group, whether it's a church or a not-for-profit or just a family, of, you know, more in-depth help. And then it just deprives building whatever the mission or the people or the neighborhood or whatever it is involved of just, you know, better, you know, help and ministry.
So I just realized that it's just – that's a snapshot of American society in a whole, though, because it's just so based on experience. It's like we got to get them the most possible yeah. experience and exposure in this one short week, so we're going to move them to a different site today.
And what does that actually do?
It doesn't.
Like, don't they step back and question
Then you that? Get like, – what happens eventually is you get these kids who grow up and have no –
no depth,
steadfastness. Yeah. They've never been taught or forced to stick with one thing long enough to see it through, even when
or
trial
to even
comes
understand
up.
Understand a problem,
yeah. right?
It's like if they come to our area, it takes man how long
time.
Did it take us?
Long time.
To realize what the heck's going on around
right.
us.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't come in for a day and understand the depth of the spiritual right. problem.
How do you guys like the immersion groups and the experience groups that come and talk to all? We want to come and we want to spend time. Can you guys spend a couple hours talking to us about
what you guys do?
Perils.
Hey,
of
part
inner
of me,
city.
Part of me really loves it because I absolutely love telling people what we're doing.
I know that, but the fruitfulness of it,
the whole idea of it,
there's not
the whole idea of it is just it's like I said, so experience based. It's we just want to.
I've been there.
Yeah, we just want to yeah. put that badge on our sash and say we've been there.
So I understand the inner city poor. I went to a 2-hour deal with Sun Ministries. You don't understand anything until yeah. you've lived there.
Right.
See, and that's I think what it does, because you're talking about the effects of that, and I think the effects are even worse, is that it just breeds in that just that mentality that what you're going to continue to seek that kind of experience mindset. Mm-hmm. Of
what's
like,
the next best
thing?
Well,
if I don't get the experience feeling or whatever, then that must not be my deal. And it just becomes so focused on yourself instead of on what God's doing.
You basically become a junkie for experience.
Yeah.
It's like if you got to go look for the next fix, the next high, the next thing, because the last one wasn't as cool as
because
you thought it was.
Because the leadership is basically putting on a pedestal experience. That's mm-hmm. what they yeah. chase after.
And they're challenged to do that.
They're dangling it out there like a yeah. carrot. Like, if you guys just keep striving after this, then eventually one day you'll get it.
Yeah.
So if you don't like that and you're in charge of a ministry, you don't like that experience-driven thing, just direct your leaders for their next trip to call me and tell me that's what they want, and we will have a very nice long conversation. And at least the message will get through. They probably yeah. won't end up coming here, but the message will get through that is just wrong.
But the reality of the church in America is if enough of their followers tell them that that's what they want, that's what they have to go.
Okay, listen, I'm going to sidetrack again, because this is an experience that happened to me today. And this is the depth of – we're talking about spiritual warfare. So I have this girl brought into me today. She's 22. She has a 2-year-old. She is 9 months pregnant. She has never had a job, and she is now homeless. Family's kicked her out, and she's wanting help, okay? So how many of you have been taught how to deal with that situation in a spiritual way? That's what I'm asking our listeners, because look, there is a reality out there that this situation exists repeatedly in areas where we minister. And if you think preaching the gospel to this girl fixes her, you're wrong.
Right.
It is a beginning place to heal her pain. But the fact is, she still has no job skills, no GED. She has one child that's been taken away and one she's about to give birth to and no place to live. And who's fixing that?
Right.
You know what her goal was? Her goal was, I need to get off the streets so I can have this baby, because if I get both my babies back, I can get enough government aid that I can survive. And I just looked her in the eye and I said, honey, I'm here for you and I want to help you. And I can house you and I can clothe you and I can feed you and I can give you a job and I can help you get skills and I can help you get your education. But I will not help you become a welfare mother. I will not do that.
Right.
If that is your goal, I will not help you. We had an hour-long conversation with me and the girl that brought her in. And when she left today, her decision was she doesn't want to be a welfare mom. Do you know how much work is left to walk her through to continue that decision? How much spiritual warfare is going to take place trying to put her back into that trap?
You can't.
It's brutal. And we're going to walk through that because that's what we teach. That's what we're trying to experience so that we know how to do that. And that's the resources God's giving us. And
you can never
– you can't get that.
You can never help her by handing her a blanket and a Gideon Bible.
No, but you know what you could do is you could help her become a welfare mom.
Yeah.
If you gave her just enough help, her goal is to get on all this assistance.
Right.
Who wants to put a 22-year-old and two kids into a welfare trap she'll never get out of?
Yeah.
That is not what Jesus would do.
Right.
But that's what we teach people is, you're alleviating her pain. You're helping her with her suffering. You're making sure she stays alive. No, you're not. You're working in harmony with Satan to put her into a trap that destroys her life and makes it almost impossible for her two kids to escape, because that's what statistics say.
Yeah.
Yes, everything's possible with Jesus, but listen, numbers don't lie. Those kids raised by that welfare mom are going to be either in prison or in government assistance unless they just got a miraculous thing coming out of it. I don't want to deal with that. I would much rather make her make hard choices and help her to be all that God made
because
her to
be. Because that's how she gets free.
Yeah,
that's
so
the
I
only
wanted
way.
To discuss that just for a second because it's like – and because I know just living your own life, doing your own thing, whatever, there's so many opportunities for disconnect. But it's like you talk about the welfare trap and it's like, well, she just needs to work hard and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, really? Okay. So she's overwhelmed. She's got a kid and another kid coming and is in survival mode. It's like, really? So really, once she gets out of survival mode because she can have food and she can have whatever and on the government's dime, she's really going to like then take it upon herself to get past that because she's still trying to live every day and function.
Jason, let me explain it a little even deeper for the people that don't understand. The people that help – and look, I don't want to condemn them because they all do really, really difficult jobs. There are people involved in hospitals and people involved in homeless shelters, and they're really trying their best in very difficult situations to help this girl. But this is what has been communicated to her. She's 22. Family is a mess. Nobody will keep her anymore. And her kid got taken out of the house she was in because of the problems within the family, and she had nowhere else to go. So the DFS says, you can't take your baby. They put him somewhere else. And here's what they've communicated to her. 2 weeks, you're having your baby for sure if we have to take it C-section because she's term, right? Okay,
right.
And they don't let her go forever. And if you don't have a place to live by then, DFS has taken your other baby too. That's the pressure that she's under right now. Can you imagine that?
Anybody go nuts.
And she has no skill. And she has no identification, so she couldn't get a job if she wanted to. She has no GED, no high school diploma, no driver's license, never had a job in her entire life, and she's an emotional wreck. And people want to come into my neighborhood, and they want to say, here's a T-shirt that says I love Jesus and a sandwich, and let's sing a song and see if we can lead you in a prayer, and everything will be okay. And then they leave, and that just really irritates me. I mean, it makes me wrathfully mad.
Me too. Because,
when I see that.
Because I know my life as of a couple years ago before I started doing this, none of that would even register with me as to what that means for her. So it's like you can't, if you've never experienced or walked through any of that or handled any of that stuff, it can't compute with you what that means for her future.
Yeah.
I'm mad right now. We got to go to a commercial.
Well, all I'm thinking is that, like, I'm thinking of how hard it was for me a couple hours ago when my 2-year-old daughter was saying, I want to go with you. I want to go with you. And she couldn't. It's like, I can't imagine what that mom and that daughter was going through when DFS was like, you got to come with me. It's like,
yeah, let's go to commercial. I'll be composed when we get back and we'll continue, but it'll take me a couple deep breaths. Ollie, let's do it.
Just simple questions threaten the perception of a beneficial system or pyramid scheme with its cogs and its pistons, mechanization of man, making more and more living a miserable existence. How can so few...
So you know what? I mean, I don't think it's...
Are you still mad?
I'm sad now because of the phone call we got on the break. Yeah. You know, we talked about our friend, our new employee, whose brother got shot this afternoon. His brother passed, and he just called us to let us know. And it is really hard to focus when you know how much hurt there is around. But it's going to make what I have to say next easier for me to say because it's not something I hear talked about. But I believe it's the reality. And some people out there are going to get really mad whenever I tell them, but just remember, you're only going to get mad because you don't believe it's true. But Jesus knows it, all right? So the deal is this. The ministries and the people who have that mindset of coming down to the inner city and giving away and feeding and dashing because they all need the gospel and they don't invest their lives in helping people, I think it's the fruit of pride. It's born out of an attitude that if you're poor, you need Jesus. And I don't know, is there no need for Jesus where they live? Why don't they just direct those resources to the local ministries? Like, you know, we're there and we're there 24/7 and we got our arms around these people and they have huge need. Okay, so for example, one of our employees, not the one we were just talking about, but previous, she's with us, but her brother got shot and then he got in a car accident and then he ended up dying in the hospital months later. And they can't really afford to do a funeral, right? So they're going to cremate him and they're scraping money together. And we're like, hey, you know, everybody needs to get together and mourn. They just like, we don't have the resource to do that. So we're giving them the cafe on Sunday and we're, you know, providing food for the family. And we're going to help them mourn the loss of her brother. And I guarantee you that event is more meaningful to Jesus than the sandwich in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Guarantee it. But there's nobody standing in line to help us do those things.
Yeah.
To do those things.
No, because they're not even involved in anybody's life enough to know that those things are happening. To know that this guy was killed or that
they see it on the news and that's all.
Are hurting. And they don't realize that, oh, I mean, because I know, because at one time in my life I was guilty of this. You look at the news and you say, oh, another person shot in North St. Louis.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't realize there's a whole family around that person that got shot. And all of those people now have extra pain that needs unpacked.
Yeah, and the answer for that is Jesus.
And you don't...
And somebody's got to show them who Jesus is. And Jesus is not the one that comes down and gives you a shirt and a sandwich and a gospel message, tells you to get right with the Lord because you need it. Jesus is the one that comes and ministers to you and wipes your tears away and gives you a hug and helps feed your family. That's Jesus.
Yeah.
I think that the reason that this happens is because Christians don't understand spiritual warfare. They have been taught one-handed warfare. And in the second hour, we're going to get to more of this, one-handed and two-handed warfare. They've been taught one-handed warfare. The roots of the division that come from denominationalism and the corrupt structures of the American church prevent us from being unified and more effective. What you said earlier about their outreach program, Mark, is right.
Right.
That's what they're doing. They got to gather up some numbers and show that they're doing ministry.
Right.
What a ridiculous way to keep score. So
sounds
let
like
me be clear.
God would vomit.
We have churches. We have churches that are great examples of doing the right thing that I'm talking about. New City Fellowship, Green Tree Church, City Lights. They've all come alongside our ministry with people and resources to help make us more effective in our ministry. Bill Dugan. He came and he's like, you know, you guys are doing lawns now and how are you doing on lawnmowers? And I'm like, well, we got a guy, you know, Zach Weaver gave us some used lawn equipment. We're going to make do. And we got this lawn tractor that don't work. We don't know how to get it fixed. He went and found a guy to fix it.
Yeah.
Put the money out of his own pocket, came up here with the truck, hauled it down, got it fixed, brought it back today and unloaded the truck. And our guy, Irvin, that does our lawns was a boss, man. He's riding that tractor. I said, Irvin, it's got a cup holder, man. Just enjoy yourself and supervise these crews, okay? And he's driving it all over the neighborhood, you know, making sure he understands how to run it because he's going to take care of it. It's awesome.
The other thing, though, is that, like, oh, that was weird. There's, like, somebody else talking at the same time.
Go ahead.
I didn't know. Bill Dugan, the guy that got it fixed, he was, like, legitimately, like, celebrating.
Oh, yeah.
When he realized
moved.
That the thing actually functioned. Like, he was excited. I'm sure he wasn't excited about, like, oh, look, you know, I did this really great thing. He was excited that God was able to do something really great and get this stuff done.
Yeah. All right. We'll run a 5-minute thing. So I'm going to, before hard break, so I'm going to go through this. All right. So, many churches just come in, they flash the gospel, and they leave. These ministries that operate in that way do not understand the physical reality of spiritual warfare, but they judge spiritual conditions by physical indicators. So here's a mind-blowing observation that I want to throw out. This is the part I said before I started that I think everybody can get mad at. What if the real spiritual problem that creates the conditions in places like where I live in Ferguson are not problems located in those communities? What if the real spiritual problem lies in the wealthy areas where they're not obeying the gospel that they preach? What if those living in the wealthy areas were actually following Jesus' teachings, like sell all you have and give it to the poor, love your neighbor as yourself, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me, those who are last will be first, serve the widows, the orphans, the poor, and visit the prisoners in their distress? What if they did this instead of visit once a month and hand out T-shirts or set up a tent and give out hot dogs while someone preaches? What if they did all that? What effect would that have spiritually on the poor, impoverished areas where the oppression and the structures and the systems of racism and oppressive legal systems are basically pounding on the backs of poor people, predominantly African American, historically oppressed by our country? It's not even debatable. It's documented. Mm-hmm. What if they did this?
I just found out today that it wasn't until this day in 1967.
I was just going to bring this
up. That the federal government just destroyed all laws about interracial marriages.
It was illegal. Interracial marriage was illegal up until
40 years ago.
So
when I was born, I was a kid, it was still illegal.
It's ridiculous.
What if they all took the poor wanderer into their house? What if they really cared for the homeless? Think about this. Instead of what I see prevailing, which is a type of arrogant care that none of them would wish on their children, can you imagine any of these people coming down to hand out a T-shirt and a sandwich and a gospel message to somebody? If their son or their daughter was homeless and on that street, do you think that's how they would treat them? Would they leave them out there in the cold overnight or in the rain or in that vacant building with just a sandwich and a T-shirt and a gospel message? Or would they take them off the street and make sure that they were cared for? And my question is this: why would you treat your child like that, but you wouldn't treat God's children like that? Think about it. It's your decision. You're the one that decides how you're going to minister. Mm-hmm. You decide what kind of value you're going to put on people. You get to look at that homeless and that downtrodden person, and you get to say, I'm willing to go all the way to help you.
Yeah.
I'm willing to risk safety, my possessions. You know, I hear that all the time. Well, we can't bring them in our house.
What
if they
steal something?
All right, I got children. I got whatever, you know, or my wife or whatever. Do you not believe God can protect you? Do you not believe that God can preserve you or that God can replace what's lost? That's what God does. That's who he is. What he wants you to get is he wants you to get the privilege and the blessing of reaching deep down into somebody else's stuff and helping to lift them up to where they can actually see the face of Jesus. You know, there are people that are so far down in the muck that when they open their eyes, all they get is dirt. Who's helping them? Why is it a small portion of Christianity? Why isn't all of Christianity?
Right. Yeah, I think that one thing that I've realized is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, they need to just pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. It's like, dude, they don't even have boots.
Right.
So
they are, in fact,
you need to realize
they are bootless.
They are, in fact, and in reality, the least of these.
Right. So you need to realize that it's your responsibility to go and lift
you
that
up. You got a closet full of boots.
There are good people we are hiring in our neighborhood. These are good people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
They are good people that need a break. They're good people that have been generationally poor,
victims
that haven't had an opportunity.
Of systematic oppression.
Right. It's not their fault that they didn't win the genetic lottery and their parents were already living out in the rich neighborhood when they were born. It's not their fault.
People who have spent years in prison for not doing anything wrong.
Right.
We've seen that. We have people in our employment that are that way. And it's the reality. And you know what? We're going to talk about what Moses did in this situation. And we're going to see how different it is from what the church did. But we're going to do that after we come back from the heartbreak that's coming up in about 5 seconds.
There was
Resistance is hosted by Dr. Terry Goodwin, Mark Zamper, Jason Callahan, and Mark Goodwin. Our theme music is The Resistance by Josh Garrels and is licensed by Marmoset Music. This episode of The Resistance Radio Show was originally broadcast live on KXEN 1010 AM in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you for being a part of The Resistance. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from our feed at theresistanceradioshow.wordpress.com. Find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church, or on our website at DiscipleDrivenChurch.org. To learn more about our missionary work in the inner cities of America, please visit sunministries.org. You can email us directly at terry@DiscipleDrivenChurch.org.